Hello everybody, this is Chandradasa at the Buddhist Centre online at thebuddhistcentre.com. Remember you can follow along with our India 3 weeks in India starting here at the Trirana International Council in Nagpur. You can follow along at thebuddhistcentre.com/Trirana. And today we have a very special edition of the podcast because we have the venerable, extremely venerable, Dhammachari Lokamitra. And if anybody can be said to be foundational as a figure in the Triratna community in India, it's Lokamitra, who, along with Bhante, I suppose, is one of the two foundational pillars for Triratna in India. He's been here since 1978. He belongs here. He's part of the world. We're in a beautiful room here at Nagaloka at the Nagarjuna Institute, and he looks perfect on his rattan couch and... It's all very lovely, and I wish you could see him. In fact, we'll take a picture at the end, you can look. So welcome to Lokamitra. It's amazing to actually get some time with you here in India. We've managed to cross paths for years and never actually managed to meet. So it's a delight to have you. And today on the council, we've been looking at what some people call succession planning. You know, how to move past the initial leadership phase of your community. We're very fortunate in that Urgyen Sangharakshita is still with us. Still kicking in all sorts of ways, and but we have been mindful for a number of years now about the need to really set up conditions for what comes afterwards. And Lokamitra is the perfect man to talk to because he was there right at the start in some ways. I'm not quite sure how close to the start you were there in the UK, but in India.
72. Things started in 68. I was ordained in 70. Oh, I came along in 72.
You came along
ordained
72.
In 74.
Yeah. And do you want to say something about what it was like back then for the folks who haven't heard those stories? Just a brief...
Well, at my ordination, we had our first order convention. And I think there were about 29 or 30 order members.
In the world.
In one small room at Aretara. And that was a two-day event. And so it was very, very small.
And that's the equivalent of this, isn't it? This is the International Council order
members
from all over the world. But this is the...
That was the convention.
That's the convention. That's everyone.
That was everyone.
So it's not just those taking a particular responsibility. That's the whole lot.
That was absolutely
So
everyone.
That's the equivalent of next week in Bodh Gaya, isn't it?
Next week, yeah.
Where you've got 600 people and that's not even half the order turning up. Amazing.
Yeah.
So you moved from being there at the sort of near the beginning in the West to really being at the beginning here. And I suppose I was interested walking over here. I was thinking about succession and we had some really good conversation today about how you... set up the conditions for that. We heard from some other Buddhist communities who've gone through the process. You know, what are your thoughts about India after Bhante's gone? And, you know, what do you see the issues as being here?
I think we'll probably be all right.
Yeah?
I think you've got a very different situation than the West. We're working in a very strong social situation. People come to the Dhamma at first largely because they want to change society.
Yeah.
And most of them identify very strongly with their local group, they have families, they work outside. So it's quite different than the West.
Sure.
And so I think those factors could influence things in the future.
Mm.
I'm not quite sure how, but I think... in the West, if the weakness is sort of going off on one's own, individualism, as it were, here the difficulty is more, the potential difficulty is more groupism, sort of fighting and so on.
Yeah.
But on the whole, I think we're doing pretty well.
So you feel optimistic about that, that whole sense of, you know, once the giants are gone, once you're gone, once Subhuti's gone, you know, and once the senior order members in India who've taken responsibility, once they're gone, the second generation have gone... Do you feel confident that the spirit of the thing is strong enough to really carry through?
I think you've got quite a few senior Indian order members who are very strong in their practice.
Yeah.
And I think the essence is their communication.
Mm.
And if their communication is basically okay, then I think things will go on.
Yeah.
But I think there are a lot of other issues. I mean, I think... We started largely in Maharashtra, and we started largely in one community, the main community that caste that became Buddhist, the Maha community, or previously known the Maha community. And it's only recently that we've been moving out of that. and especially through Nagaloka and other activities. So at Nagaloka we try and get people from other communities all over India, other scheduled castes, other Dalits. And I think this is crucial, because otherwise there's a tendency always to keep the Dhamma to yourself.
That's right.
You know, wherever you are, it's a sort of, you know, the gravitational pull of the old conditioning. And, you know, I'm not criticising our order members in Maharashtra, but it's always a possibility.
Yeah.
And it's always a possibility that that things will be concentrated here, the leadership will be concentrated here.
Well, you have the same thing in the UK, don't you? An overwhelming majority of order members, particularly experienced order members in one country, which is just a historical accident. But it has a cultural effect, and that has to be consciously worked with and sometimes against, as I think.
Yeah.
It's interesting, because we put your talk, you gave a very good talk. If you haven't heard it, you can listen to it on the website, and you can also see Lokamitra's excellent slideshow that went along with it. I was reflecting afterwards, we put it up online and immediately people respond, you know, these days.
Yeah.
You can like it instantly on Facebook, all that stuff. People quite moved, quite touched by it, which in a way is usual.
Yeah.
In fact, I think you'd have to be a certain kind of insensitive soul not to be touched by that those stories. And it occurred to me as I was watching that response, you know, largely in the West, people liking and saying, oh, this is great, how inspiring. I was thinking, well, is that one of the bridges between the order and the movement in the West and the order and the movement in the East, in as much as your work is quite specific to this context, and we've been talking all week in the International Council about, you know, how do you have a united order across such varied cultural divides, such cultural gaps? And actually, it seems to leap the gap when you talk about your work here, even though in a certain sense it's foreign, even exotic to people in the West, and quite easy to respond to without having to do much. I did think, well, there is a genuine spark of inspiration comes across. And do you think that kind of socially engaged Buddhism that is integral to things here is something that is going to have to catch in the West if the whole thing's to remain?
I don't particularly like the term socially engaged Buddhism, but I think it's very useful. I learned my socially engaged Buddhism from Bhante.
What would you call it? What would your preferred term be?
Well, I think it's inherent in Buddhism. You've got Bahujana Hitaya, Bahujana Sukhaya, what the Buddha said after the first rainy season retreat. And you know, when I came here, we'd started, although they're very, very, just in seed form, right livelihood activities in the West, we'd started communities. And so you had the seeds of social engagement, if you see what I mean. And I think the key to this is trying to see Bhante has in common, or what Dr. Ambedkar has in common, what they have in common with each other.
Mm.
And they have many, many aspects of their approach in common. Because people here, their first contact with the Dhamma is Dr. Ambedkar. So it's very, very important to them that is, as it were, brought out in how they practice and so on. Mm. But I don't see them as contradictory, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, sure.
But I think we need to understand each other and learn from each other. Otherwise, you know, differences could divide us.
So here's a slightly, not exactly pokey question, but it's striking. I'm sitting here talking to you in India.
Yeah.
You're a white man from England. I've met your sister more than I've met you, the wonderful Vijayamala. And Srimala, indeed, but I know Vijayamala a little more. And it strikes me that actually we also need go-betweens between the two places. And I know it's not necessarily possible, but I would love to see you come to the West more and actually, at least as a holder almost of an internal archetype, someone who can speak to the history and speak to the future, who's lived both sides of it. And I understand that one has to pick and choose in life, but
well, I do visit England once or twice a year, and I'm always happy to give talks in centres if it's sort
of... Okay, do we have your permission then to broadcast that request?
No, I'm always very happy. I mean, it's a matter of fitting it in, and I can't do too much.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm always happy to do that.
Hmm.
But I think there's another point about future which I want to mention, just because I've been thinking about it quite a lot. In a number of years' time, the Indian order is going to be much, much bigger than the West.
Of course.
And I think this is something we need to think about.
Right.
Because as it becomes bigger, it's going to have a stronger influence. And
in what way, how would you see that influence specifically?
Well,
what
perhaps would it be? The social influence, perhaps right. This, you know, the influence coming from Dr. Ambedkar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to learn to work with this. I haven't got any answers.
No, sure. Yeah.
Because by going out to people here, we work in a certain way, and then we expose ourselves to certain influences, as it were. And it's not just us here, as it were, because it's a whole
right.
order.
And so this defines practice in India in a particular way, and I suppose you're positing in a way that as the order grows and becomes bigger in India, that defined version of practice, as it were, becomes influential and starts to affect how things are defined elsewhere.
It could do. It could do. I just see, you know, going back to the tendencies towards individualism and, as it were, the group, which are actually universal. I mean, you can't sort of divide East and West like that, but more individualism probably in the West and more to the group in India. So I think these, you know, when we're weak, then these things will divide us. So I think these are the sort of things we've got to learn to work with. And I find it fascinating because we could be very, very big.
Very big. That's right. Culturally, we
and
could
you're
be
talking
big.
About succession.
Yeah.
I'm talking about future, 20, 30, 40, 50 years' time. I think we have to begin to think.
Well, in a way, that's partly how we're thinking with the whole communication project and the internet project, is that you're not really doing this for your own generation or even the
exactly.
next generation.
You
you're doing it for...
in advance and so on, yeah.
You know, it's trying to set up, it's prestigious summit pad, isn't it? You're trying to lay the conditions for something
conditions,
to rise.
Yeah.
Hmm. So here you are at this point, and I don't know, is it gentlemanly to ask your age again? I know you mentioned
65.
65, and it struck me, you look fantastic for 65. You look like a man who's...
You look closely, it doesn't.
No, it does, but we'll do a Zoom shot later, folks, on his on his pores. He looks radiant, I think is the word, with light and with good health and a glow. So, you know, you've got to what would be bus pass age in Britain.
Yeah.
You could happily retire and disappear over the sunset. I've got a feeling you're not going to do that, are you?
Well, what would I do?
I don't know, long retreats. I don't
know. I would like to do more retreats. And I will do more retreats.
It's okay, you don't have to justify yourself to the internet. They're very forgiving. Now, I was just curious that, you know, you've been working extremely hard for a long time. As I said, you've had a very big influence on both sides of the interesting cultural mountain range that runs through the Gujarat Buddhist community. You've passed many times between them. Is that, you know, are you so, in a way, are you so contented with the shape and the feel of your life that it just seems natural to continue in that way? Or do you have a sense of, like, ambition wouldn't be the right word, but goals for personal practice that are not necessarily met in the kind of life you've been leading so far, you know? Are you reflecting in old age? Are you doing that kind of... 65 is the new 45, right enough.
Yeah. You know, I can't see myself stopping what I'm doing.
Right.
I can see myself working in different ways in this context. There's certain goals I've got with the work, which I want to accomplish by the time I'm 70 in the next 5 years.
Okay.
And I want to sort of... not a break, but I want to review, if I'm still alive, what I'm doing and how I'm living at that point.
And have those goals just emerged through the whole kind of course of your work, or has it become quite specific, like, you know, this is all developed to a certain extent and you can see key things that still need to happen in order to secure it, or, you know?
Well, the first goal really is to make sure that Nagaloka and the work here is sustainable organisationally, financially, and so on. That it can continue without me.
Great.
And we're well on the way. I mean, I'm not unhappy with our progress, but there's still a lot of work to be done in that way. And at the same time, to see networks of our ex-students developing all over India, at least in five or six states, sort of quite strong over the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Then after that, who knows? But I mean, I imagine what I would like to do is just do more retreat work with our ex-students and more teaching work.
Mm.
That's what I really like to do.
It struck me watching your presentation that there's kind of gold there. This whole, I know you're building a new building for your alumni, but kind of reverse alumni from the West, where you're going to be paying people to come back rather than getting them to pay for the building.
Yeah.
But it struck me that there was something really substantial there that's waiting to be tapped. Yeah. This network of people that you've trained and sent out, and the idea of drawing them back for training.
Well, this is where I really want to work, because these are the future.
Right.
And, you know, the different states, Buddhism is very, very basic there. There's almost nothing in most of them. In fact, just about nothing. And it's just people want Buddhism so much. They want clear teachings, they want confidence, they want Dharma-based social action. And, you know, we can help.
You can, yeah. 22 million Buddhists, that was a big figure. When you read it out, it really affected people.
Well, I think they're probably more like... I mean, it's very difficult to say what is a Buddhist, but I would say probably more like 40 million people in India consider themselves Buddhist today.
Yeah.
But most of the so-called scheduled castes, which make up over 200 million people, will be open to Dr. Ambedkar, inspired by Dr. Ambedkar, and when they're inspired by Dr. Ambedkar, they will want to know about his solution in Buddhism.
Sure.
And so it's enormous.
It's astonishing, isn't it? And the scale of it is astonishing.
But it's not only them.
Yeah,
many people from the scheduled tribe community are becoming interested in Buddhism. They're 100 million plus. And even some from the so-called other backward classes, with the old Shudra community, which is 600 million people. But only a few.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's just...
The scale, the potential is huge, isn't it, for impact?
There's so much interest in Buddhism, and... we can do something about it.
Yeah. Well, you do something about it, don't you?
Yeah.
I'm just aware of the time, unfortunately. We're actually going out tonight to see one of the projects, the hostel, the girls' hostel. Yeah. Is it in Nagpur itself?
Yeah, it's just 10 minutes.
Yeah. So the bus is leaving in a few minutes. We're going to go and do that. If you want to support Nagaloka, an extremely impressive project, you can go to nagaloka.org. There'll be details there about what you can do very practically and actually quite cheaply to support people through their training here. Has a tremendous impact. Go to thebuddhacentre.com/Triratna and listen. I urge you to listen to Lokamitra's presentation. Very moving, very inspiring, and a real pleasure to meet you, sir.
Thank you.
After all these years of sort of watching your name in the distance, very nice to finally get to spend some time.
Yeah.
We'll be back tomorrow with another podcast and with many other things from the International Council. Until then, goodbye.